Capitan America che dà la palla, si chiude il triangolo fra lui e Giroud, ed è Christian Pulisic che segna un meraviglioso 2-0 USA.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Anthony Torgrud.
What's up guys, glad to be back. Obviously your favorite host, I definitely read all the love in the comments, so glad to receive that. And we have a very special guest this week. Ollie, you can introduce him.
Yeah, we've actually had Liam on before, and it's a pleasure to welcome him back. Liam Tharm from The Athletic. We met at a Milan Inter game when we were both in the press box. Inter won that 1-2-0. Things have got worse since then, it'd be fair to say. But yeah, Liam, thank you for coming back on.
No, it's a pleasure. I feel like I've slightly cursed you guys now. I might need to go away or be burnt or something to lift this curse.
This is like our attempt at an exorcism right here. Like, we had you on once and now we have to close the circle. Person that's mainly to blame for the defeat that we're about to talk about is AJ, because he decided to cuss out Henrikh Mkhitaryan last week by calling him like an average player or whatever it was. And of course, he got two goals and an assist. So this is going to be fun. If you normally listen with like kids about or whatever, I'm not sure why you would do that, but there's probably going to be a couple of Fs and stuff flying in here just because of the nature of the result and the pent-up rage that we've got. Ahmed Bader and Stefano have already done videos on the channel, so make sure to go and check them out if you haven't already. Stefano's is more of a tactical look. Ahmed's is, I won't call it a rant. There's plenty in there, but it's definitely worth a watch. And as always, we must say thank you to our Substack founding members, Des, McGlynn, Ali Tareen, Tito Mack, Moritz Paulman, Joey Gawler, Kemin, and MJ. Thank you for all the support you're showing us over on the Substack with the bonus content. We'll be back with another bonus podcast later this week. Okay, let's dive in then.
Yay.
I'm sick of playing this slot now. Five times in a year is enough for me. I've had enough of playing against this slot. We need to start before the game, though, to do proper justice on reviewing this. We need to start. We'll bypass AJ's comments, although they could do with some introspection, and we'll go straight to Pioli's pre-match press conference, where he uttered words, and I'm slightly paraphrasing here, but it wasn't far off this. He said, I don't care about the other derbies. I only care about the one that's ahead. I think he maybe should have cared about the previous derbies and what we saw in the four games in 2023 that we lost in a very similar fashion to this one, let's be honest. I spoke to Liam before the game via Twitter DMs, and he said, I'm throwing you under the bus a little bit here. He said he was quite confident for us going into this game because you'd seen some good things from those first three games. I'm going to give you a chance to talk about why you thought this would go differently.
I think for the exact reason where you speak about the four previous derbies, in the flow of the game in terms of in both the first leg and in the Champions League final and the Supercoppa in particular, going 1-0 down sort of very early. In a similar fashion of, you know, failing to defend Federico Di Marco off the left. And I was thinking as well earlier today that, if I remember correctly, Liao was injured in the first leg of the derby and didn't start and was on the bench. And I was even more surprised then that Pioli didn't sort of switch system and go, OK, we're without our key player. I think Milan are more balanced now with the chances they brought in. But knowing that, OK, this time your hand's going to be forced. You've had the same starting 11 in the first three games of this season, but Tomori suspended. So you need to change something. And having listened to your guys' preview pod and Ollie being very clear that, you know, Simon Kjaer was going to be a problem if left 2v2 up against Marcus Thuram and Lautaro Martinez. And sort of in the first 5 minutes, I thought, God, you must be absolutely fearful. And it was ironic, really, because in the UK, TNT Sports, formerly BT, was showing it and didn't show the first 15 minutes. I have no idea why. The coverage started 15 minutes in and it was like, knowing what's happened in the previous derbies, you're going to need to show the first 15 minutes because it's probably going to be into one of that. But I honestly believe that the transfers that you made, Loftus-Cheek, I thought added a lot more in midfield in the first few games, partnered Pulisic really well, and he offered a lot more on the right because then you had a dribble all of a sudden. You were better balanced going forward. It wasn't like having Brahim Diaz off the right, sort of playing inside. And I quite liked the thing with Kalabia playing inside more. I thought it worked quite nicely. And has Hernandez, or Teo, I should say, sorry, in a position where he can play more forward passes. But it wasn't really the game for that, I don't think. But it worked well in the three games prior to that.
Yeah, it did. Like, there was mixed confidence, wasn't there, going into this one from us. I said we'd get beat 3-1, I think it was. And even at 2-1, I stuck to my guns on that and messaged you saying, don't worry, they'll score again. And they did, but I didn't see another two goals coming. We completely imploded. I honestly don't think this is the kind of game that needs individual analysis of goals because, you know, we drive ourselves crazy. To me, I think we just need a broader reflection on the strategy that was deployed by Pioli. Majority, it comes down to him and his approach and what he instructs the players to do, but also the players themselves who ultimately did let him down. AJ, I can't remember if I said it in the chat or not, but basically the emphasis was on not conceding an early goal, and we did that again,
Yeah, five
which
minutes.
kind of meant we'd lost.
Yeah, I mean, look, you could argue there was a foul in the build-up on that one, and that kind of changed a lot of the dynamic early on. But at the end of the day, like, you can't concede a fifth-minute goal and then collapse. You know, there's 85 minutes plus left to play, and if you don't turn it back on after an early goal, then what are you even doing? And you know, conceding four more after that, like, we obviously didn't. Like, Pioli got a lot of heat for his comments about we controlled the game the first 4 minutes. And, like, that's true. But the moment you didn't control the game, you conceded and you never got back in charge. So, like, you got to take some blame for that, you know? Foul in the buildup on the first one. It is what it is. You get back out there. It's not the first time a team's gone behind in a game. You know, you could win games that you go behind. We've done it in this exact fixture before, a 2-1 where Giroud scored a brace in the second half to win it. So, you know, it's not unprecedented. It's not something that can't be overcome. It's not like these players are unknown to big games. They've all played in big games before. I mean, all the Chelsea guys were in a Champions League final. You know, we've played in the Champions League semifinal against this team. We've won the Scudetto. Like, there's been big games before. There's no excuse. Maybe Reinders might be like, oh, the lights were too bright. But even then, like, he wasn't the worst person on the field. You know, like, no one was standalone culpable for everything. Like, they all just equally weren't good enough. I mean, Pulisic, my guy, it's his birthday. I hate to attack him, but he wasn't good enough. And Chukwueze off the bench wasn't much better. He might have even been worse, to be honest with you. They all just really looked out of their depth, and probably comes down to tactics. It looked like all the forwards, all the midfielders, both the fullbacks pushing up to their box, and then we just leave our two center backs on an island in the midway line with their two strikers. And every single time, all Inter had to do was wait for us to make a bad pass or get a foot in, make an interception, and then they make two simple passes because no one's in the midfield. So it goes to whomever they want. They have five midfielders versus our zero. And then one more pass to the forwards, who are then 2v2. And all they had to do is spread apart. And now they're one-on-one. And it was too much. It's happened 5 games in a row now.
Bidair used the word disrespectful, like Pioli's approach to these games is disrespectful to Inter, and I fully agree with it. Like, it's got past the point of it being naive now for me. The you say what you want about the opening goal, and I do think there was probably cumulatively a foul either from the Theo shove from Dumfries, or I still think that Chao kind of got trampled on getting for that ball. But you concede within 5 minutes again. And I saw a stat that in the five games that we played against Inter in 2023, we've conceded five goals in the opening 20 minutes of those games. So we're slow starters. But the thing that is really, really worrying is that it has pretty much every time been their first attack of the game. So if you can't keep out their first attack of the game, the first time they get the ball in a meaningful way into your final third, there's a real problem there. Because when you concede, there's not many worse teams in Europe to concede a first goal to than Inter because of how well they play with a lead. You know, that plays right into their hands of being able to sit deep, compact block, and then batter you at the other end 2-on-2, which is what we kept doing. There were certain things as well, even when we went a goal down and we were starting to get some possession, we were camping out in their half a little bit around the half-hour mark. It was still really naive because we switched to like a 3-2 build-up with three in behind who were allowed to just circulate the ball because Inter are a goal up. They don't have to press the centre backs. They don't have to press round on Calabria. Calabria then tucks inside, to play alongside Krunic. It's kind of like a box midfield then, a 3-2-2-3. So Inter just stick their two forwards, Lautaro and Thuram, on Krunic and Calabria. Don't have to press the three at the back. Then you've got a 3-on-2 on the other part of the box midfield, and then five guarding our three. And then you're looking at it thinking, well, we're outnumbered in every single department now. And then when they win the ball back, they don't even think about playing it to the three midfielders. They just bang it long. Like, Bastoni is a really good distributor of the ball, let's be honest. And the two wing-backs are really good at playing it to each other and either advancing it through running or through passing. One of the centre-forwards can drift out wide. It was Thuram majority in this game to go and battle for the ball and then square it to the other. I'm just fed up of seeing this same pattern. Like, we have no idea how to cope with it. And I know that there are a lot of teams in Serie A, and by virtue of the fact they reached the Champions League final, there's a fair few teams in Europe that are struggling to cope with this Inzaghi team. But every time he's trying to come up with the antidote to it, we seem to slip further away from what the actual recipe might be. And I'm not saying that we should have played three centre. And I don't think we could have matched them up system-wise this time, to be honest, because we didn't have enough fit centre-backs. You know, you probably can't throw Pellegrino out there for his Serie A debut. We know Caldara's out now. Kalulu was injured. Tomori suspended. So you probably can't match them up that way. And I think you just have to bite the bullet and play a 4-5-1. And you've got to get to half-time level. And that sounds really negative for us. But I don't think a draw was the end of the world in this result. And the pressure was probably more so on them, being the home team and a home team, whatever. But to keep going and to prove that they can steamroll the new Milan as well as the old one. And if we could have stayed in the game for as long as possible, then, you know, we'd have been able to ask more questions of them in terms of, okay, you've got to commit a few more bodies forward now. And that might have played more into our hands. But you concede after 4 minutes again, first attack of the game, and you're left with a mountain to climb. I honestly think that moment, the moment that Mkhitaryan smacked it in to make it 1-0, was literally the moment we lost the game. You know, even at 2-1, when Leao makes it 2-1, I didn't feel particularly confident. Thuram deserves a mention. He came so close to joining us in the summer, by all accounts, and he probably had a 9 out of 10 game.
Yeah, I got heat for saying we should have just paid the extra $500,000 for that too, but, you know, no one wants to applaud me for that one. They just want to attack me when I wrongly say an Inter player is bad, but, you know, I digress.
Yeah. Him and Lautaro, Liam, have got a pretty good partnership going on.
Yeah, so early in a time as well. Normally we associate sort of good strike partnerships, I think, with needing time to sort of gel together. And I think if you were to compare him to sort of Dzeko as a player, he's Dzeko and Lautaro always feel, maybe because of the height difference, but I feel like they're kind of different points on a spectrum at opposite ends. And I think Thuram feels like he's probably somewhere in the middle, that he's a slightly different style player. And I think that Milan just didn't adapt to that enough, as you say. I mean, we saw goals in the Supercoppa where Dzeko was pulling out onto the wing. There's, you know, the fluidity of that has been as much a problem of defending it as it's been trying to defend sort of 2v2. And I can completely sort of empathise with you on this and agree with you, and that the way that he keeps trying to play and sort of make these slight tweaks is going farther away from what the plan is to try and beat this team. I know that Inter are exceptionally good at what they do in a very sort of specific way. I think their interesting stat last season was they won a lot of games in the league. They lost a fair few, but they hardly drew any. They're kind of a team that when they go ahead in games, they can hold on most of the time. When they go behind, they can't always adapt. But I don't currently have Pioli very high on the list of sort of in-game tactical managers to tactically adapt. I think the stat was, I might be wrong on this, so I might need to check, but on TNT commentary, they were saying that Milan haven't come back from behind to win a game since they beat, I think it's Inter 3-2, possibly at the start of last season, which is quite a few games to, you know, not come back from, if that is correct. But again, even in all these derbies that, you know, hadn't scored in four of them, you know, to finally get a goal now was in a period where they actually controlled a good chunk of the game. I thought Teo had some good forward passes. I think there's two sort of moments that stand out in the first half of two missed chances was, I can't remember, I think it was Mkhitaryan had a head off of a Di Marco cross at maybe 10 or 11 minutes at 1-0, where you think, oh my God, if they put in a second here, it's just a rerun of the Champions League semi-final, and then the game's completely out of the hands. And then there's a great Teo chance where he plays a really nice ball into Giroud, who makes a sort of sideways run across, and he sets it back and carries it into the box. And I really like Teo. I think he's one of Milan's best attackers in particular. He's definitely one of the best left backs in the world. But then you do reach a point of you go, who do you want getting on the end of your chances in the box? When you look at the bodies that Inter get when they get four or five in the box, two strikers, midfielders making late runs, and you get your left back having one of your best chances of the game, it's difficult. I thought they kept the wingers really quiet. I thought, yeah, I know Leao scored, but I didn't think he had a particularly impactful game beyond that. There was a Dumfries almost error in the first half that almost gave him a chance. But yeah, they completely shut down him and Pulisic. They went 2v1 in the wide areas, got the central midfielder back to support the wing back, and I thought didn't do enough to sort of exploit the wide spaces. You know, we speak about how compact Inter are, but as a system, they play a back five. So that's three centre backs, three central midfielders, and two strikers. That's eight bodies plus a goalkeeper in the middle of the pitch. And I like this new system a lot with Kleber coming inside and dropping Teo a bit deeper, as you said, to make that 3-2 build up. But you're then adding more bodies to the central part of the pitch. Really, this is a game where you've got to pin the wing backs, or they drop deep anyway, but you've got to start attacking them, probably get your full backs overlapping a lot, make runs in behind, try and drag them, pull them apart, get overlaps in, you know, be penetrative. Then when you do take risk out wide, okay, it might go out for a goal kick or a throw-in, but you're playing it centrally, you lose it there. And as you've said, you're then giving them ample opportunity. You know, there's a collection of first half counter-attacks in that game where Turam's getting released or Lautaro's getting released. It wasn't a case of, okay, they did score off their first attack, but they then had more chances in that half to make it even more. I think the second goal sort of showed that, where even though Dumfries overhits the cross from really early, that, you know, Milan have time to recover and don't really get into shape despite having a few bodies back. They don't get as many back as Inter would have done. And then to concede an amazing goal is a fair point. But they were just conceding chances that Inter would never concede. And that was something I said to Ollie, I think, actually, when we were, yeah, at San Siro watching the first leg of the derby together, that it was the same in the Champions League then. And I don't feel like that's been learned from sufficiently.
Another thing as well, like with that Turam goal to make it 2-0, as you mentioned, it was an overhit ball from Dumfries. I think it says a lot about psychologically where our defence is at, because even though we'd only conceded two goals in the first three games of the season, we got the clean sheet against Bologna first game out. And obviously, Tomori was out, which does alter things a little bit. But what your centre back should still be able to do is make solid, rational decisions in a situation like Chiao was in for that second goal. He gets sort of, I'd say, posted up by Turam, squares up to him. And what would you not do as a centre back, or speaking as I was always told, you just definitely don't show them inside onto their stronger foot. That's one thing you absolutely do not do. If you have to take him wide and he fires in a good cross with his weaker foot, and they score, it's someone else's problem. It's not your fault for conceding that goal. And instead, what Chiao did, and again, this is where I think the confidence thing comes into it. If we're sort of as we were during our better run earlier this year in sort of February time when we had the three at the back and whatnot, he probably puts a foot in, or he at least challenges him. He at least makes it a battle to get a shot off. And instead, as I say, shows him onto his right foot late. Great finish. You know, I think if he has another nine goes at that out of 10, he doesn't score them. And there was nothing that Maignan could do about it either. But yeah, that was just a typical, it almost felt like back when we used to face Lukaku, that 3-0 when Conte's Inter beat us 3-0 and Lukaku countered in the second half, and he got one-on-one with Romagnoli and just bullied him. He toyed with him. He just waited for his moment and then laced a shot into the corner. And it's like, what are we doing here? You know, you need to stop letting your centre backs get in isolation with these guys. At the other end, I literally just made a list of notes, so we can just talk through them. The other thing I've got is geriatric Giroud. That maybe seems harsh, because we know that he came into the game having just about recovered from an ankle sprain. I'd say maybe he hadn't on the evidence that we saw. But another thing about Inter and the system that they play and the ability to be able to defend the lead from early on is that very often you have three centre backs on the one striker. In this case, Giroud, who doesn't cause many problems with his movement, he's a pretty static focal point for your attack. He might win the odd knockdown or flick on, but they seem to rarely go to anyone. Are you surprised that we're still I don't mean still sticking with him because we don't really have another choice, but are you surprised we didn't invest in a striker in the summer perhaps? Or do you think that we can still do a job with Giroud at the top of this system?
I think yes to both questions, actually. Just partly because of Milan's stature and where they are currently and what they're sort of aspiring towards. Even from when you look beyond the tactics of it, the squad building perspective of wanting, competition for places, but also you have to be realistic about a player with his injury record at his age, and especially when you've got, how many different cups that you're in, plus a league, plus Champions League. So it's unrealistic to expect a player to be able to play X number of games over a season without, suffering injury. And also I think it's a case of sort of having solutions that, as you say, different defences into being a very specific way that they're going to set up and defend against you. You need different forwards to then try and sort of counteract that and play against them in different ways. So, yeah, I really was surprised, to be honest. But that said, I think the signings you have brought in have really lifted the floor of the squad. I feel like last time I was on, we were speaking about the fact that the ceiling for Milan felt like it was quite high, particularly compared to Inter. The Inter have a really good floor, really good base that they never seem to, they don't seem to collapse like Milan sort of have done this time. But I thought, yeah, you've really added quality, added depth. I think Calabria spoke about that, saying that, the players really suit the style of how they want to play. But yeah, not adding in another striker. I also feel like then it adds sort of more of a burden to Leao in particular, maybe a little bit Pulisic too, but, you run the risk of becoming a very specific team in terms of your attack. And I know that Leao's big thing is like, he can be predictable, but he's just unstoppable because of his speed, his directness, the timing of his runs and his sort of ball striking ability and his dribbling. But yeah, you just don't then at times have enough either options to bring off the bench or enough adaptability. And I think as much as I'm critical of Pioli, he's probably not been helped in that regard. I don't know how much of a say he has in transfers, but if your bench is limited, as good a tactician as you can be, sometimes you need the players as well to be able to do it.
Yeah, I'm going to ask both of you the same question here, and we'll start with AJ. Is the gap between the squad that Inter have and the squad that Milan have worth 4 goals, a 5-1 victory?
I don't think so.
And therefore, is the difference the coaching? Is it that simple? Is the net difference, therefore, the coaching?
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's fair to say at this point Inter have a better squad, right? After 5 games, looking at the depth that they have.
Takes a lot for you to admit that.
Yeah, I fucking hate them. I hate every player on the stupid team. I hate the whole organization. I hate the color blue. Like, it is what it is. But yeah, they've gotten the best of us 5 times in a row. You got to say, like, yeah, they are better than us right now. One thing we got to point out, though, is it's week 4. We can still win the Scudetto. We could lose both games to them 6-0, however bad you want it to be. Still win the Scudetto, it's not up to us alone to beat them. There's other teams that could do it. So at this point, it really doesn't matter long term. But yes, squads right now, I don't think the difference is a 4 goal per game difference. I do think the tactics were as wrong as they've ever been at this point. He's tried very slightly different tactics each game, but overall, it's the same general philosophy, and it's just not getting there. I don't know really what coach is going to come in and change it overnight to where that gap's going to be reduced or even overcome completely. But yeah, right now, I mean, look, as a cup manager, like Inzaghi is, preparing for a one-off game is easy. He could prepare for specifically Milan and prove, as he has, that it's simple for him. So the coaching plays a big part, but just to go back to Giroud a little bit here, I don't know how much I could blame him. He's 37 years old. Like, you're not going to teach an old dog new tricks. There's only so much we could expect from him. We tried to get another striker. Today, Nicholas Jackson said he was close to joining us, but then Chelsea swooped in with more money at the last minute. We were close to Openda. We just missed out on Thuram by $500,000. Like, we tried. We had players we wanted. We approached Jonathan David with a ridiculous loan plus option move at 50 mil, like something that was never going to happen, but we threw fillers out there, and what do we end up with? Luka Jovic, who made a lot of tweets, and here we are. So, get him again next time, I guess.
People actually thought that was his Twitter account as well.
Yeah,
yeah, Liam, is it that bad? Is like Inzaghi that much clearer as a tactician? Because one thing I will say is, and I don't want to disrespect Inter in any way by saying this, but I honestly don't think that they'll have an easy. They won't have many easier 3 points this season than that. I don't think that they prepared for this game in an extraordinary way. I wouldn't be surprised if Inzaghi just went into the dressing room and said, do the same as you've done to them the last 4 times, because everything I've seen suggests that, if anything, they're going to play more into our hands.
No, I completely agree with what Adrian was saying. It takes a lot, actually, I think, to look at it with that much sort of forward thinking and say, yeah, that this is, as it worked in the first 3 games, a game plan that will work for you, I think, in, let's say, 90% of your league games this season, which could still give you a really good season, could improve on last season, could put you up there as sort of title contenders, particularly if we look at the drop-off that Napoli are expected to have the season without Spalletti there. Juve still being as threadbare as they are. I know Roma put up a massive win on the weekend as well, but even they, so I think Milan looks quite comfortable against them when they played, even playing a large portion of the game with 10 men. So it's difficult, because how much stock you want to put into a derby defeat, particularly when there's a lot of emotion involved, and a bad defeat, a bad collapse. I think it's weird, because on the balance of play, I'm not someone that normally likes saying this, but it wasn't a 5-1 result in the sense of the sheer volume of chances that you conceded. I still think they comfortably deserved to lose the game, Milan. That their way of playing was just, as you say, almost disrespectful, but also like just lacking in sense to a degree as well. You feel like you could see a lot of these things happening, but it wasn't like you conceded a shed load of chances, which again, you never need to do against Inter. I think it was in the last season where they put up some ridiculous winning games in a row, like 5 or 6-0 in the build-up to the Champions League final. So I think it's then hard to juggle both things of saying, okay, we can accept that this is really good for most of the time in the season, and that's what a manager or a head coach is there to do. But at the same time, to go, look, this really hurts, and it really sucks that the fact you were almost carrying a burden those 4 games previously, and then it becomes one of those silly things where the fact that I think it's now a record for Inter winning 5 in a row, that, okay, this game came as a result of losing 4 previously. So you're almost trying to compensate for those 4 previous losses, and then this one hurts even more. So it's the manner of the defeat more so than actually having the defeat itself. But no, the gap isn't quite as big, but I think that almost makes it worse to lose that badly, that you can't just go, oh, okay, well, we're not at their level. We've gone at them, had a really good go, and their quality's shone through. It's like we've got individual or systematic flaws that feel like they need to be addressed more.
That's the thing, is that the Champions League semi-defeat should hurt more emotionally. Yeah. You know, we have the first leg at home. Again, I say at home, obviously, we both played at San Siro, but our leg was the first. Our leg was the first leg. So you lose that 2-0, and it's like, well, that is a really bad result. We've got a mountain to climb now. It would have to be a minor miracle for us to overturn this and go through to the final, but it would be incredible. It didn't happen. Then you got some rather honest reflections afterwards. We've been beaten 2-0 and 1-0, but 3-0 on aggregate. Never really threatened them, to be honest. Maldini coming out and saying, we don't really have the tools to combat their way of playing. Sort of a dig at Pioli for saying you haven't come up with the ideas to combat this system. But also just, I think, an acceptance that the squad isn't up to par. And then over the summer, what happens with Maldini leaving, but then Tonali being sold in a club record deal. We make 10 signings. We use that money and a bit more to reinvent the midfield, to add some depth to the forward department. And then you really think, especially after winning those first 3 games and looking pretty comfortable as we did, okay, we can have a go at Inter now. We really can. Like, we should have closed the gap. We should be able to compete with these guys. So it wasn't like before when we'd lost and it was like, well, we need to get to the summer anyway, and then we'll make some signings and we'll get a bit bigger, and you know, we'll get some physicality in midfield, we'll get the winger that we need, and we'll look better for it. Instead, the result got worse and the collapse got worse, which was really worrying. Whether that result happens with our first choice centre back pairing, I don't know, but we can't necessarily point at Tomori and Chiao as a pairing and say they were airtight before. Tomori had a really up and down season after being really good in the Scudetto winning campaign. And then Chiao is 21, so he's expected to have some growing pains, especially against world-class centre-forwards like Lautaro, and I think Thuram might head that way. And yeah, the gap got wider, at least in terms of the scoreline. I saw XG-wise, which I put limited weight into, it suggested it should have been more like a 3-1. You know, in terms of big chances, and I don't think we could have grumbled with that. We'd just still been annoyed with it. But I think it was those two goals, particularly the last one from Fratesi, where you've been letting their midfield run through into the box all game, and then you decide just not to pick up. That came from a Chukwueze giveaway at the other end as well. And it's like the whole team front to back by that point had systematically decided it's not our night. So let's just try.
You saw Liao's reaction after the third goal. You know, he had just scored, put everything on his back to get back in the game. Like, that wasn't an easy chance that he took. It was, you know, typical Liao, but it's still a difficult shot. And he puts that away. And then less than 10 minutes later, we concede a third. And you see him, he's kicking the ground, throwing his hands up, screaming, fuck. Like, if your star player is that disgruntled with your team's performance and he turns off, like, how do you expect everyone else to react? The players who don't think they could do anything. You know, Liao believes he's capable of doing everything because he is. The other players might not be at that level yet. And then they see this and they're like, fuck it, it's done. And then we give away the fourth. And then we give away the fifth, like you said. No one tracked back. Like, you see Teo and Calabria just jogging. Like, it is what it is. Here we go again. You know, they've been there. Yeah. This team has been in the trenches and not dug themselves out of it quite a few times. Look at March. Look at January. Like, this isn't even the third five-goal defeat in Pioli's era, let alone this team's in the last, you know, season. So it's rough. They don't.
Pioli said. Pioli said something interesting in his press conference today before the Newcastle game. He got asked if the time that the patience that's needed basically for the new players has actually been underestimated off the back of the first three results that we got. And he said, and I don't know, because there was a blackout basically, so the stream went down for this. The questions were literally being asked in darkness at Milanello. It was quite funny. But I don't know what Tony said this with, but he said, I think we suffered more from those who'd experienced previous derbies than the new players. And I think what he's basically saying is there are supposed to be leaders in this team. Give me a fucking hand, you know? Like, take some responsibility, because everybody points at Teo and thinks back to, you know, he's had a couple of good derby performances, and there was the pantomime villain thing where he got sent off against Dumfries, and you think, well, there's a player that's always going to be up for the fight against this lot. He actually dislikes Inter. He'd given up by the 80th minute. That can't happen. Kier wasn't even the worst centre-back. As I say, Ciao, that's a whole separate discussion. He's young, he's going to make mistakes, especially against good players. But Kier is a player that should be a leader. He also shouldn't be in that game, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Calabria is your captain. I think more so than a vocal captain, he's a captain who's going to try lead by example with consistent performances. Rabbit in the headlights. Every time he plays against DiMarco, he does not know what to do with him. And then you look to your forwards. Giroud, unfortunately, a little bit starved of service, did okay when he was able to link up. But ultimately, you've got a leader who's heading into his late 30s. And you've got Liao, who, as I just said, did the hard part in finishing the first real chance in the game that he got. And then he turns around 5 minutes later, and up the other end, someone's failed to trap Mkhitaryan again. And he scores to make it 3-1 and put the game to bed again. So the leaders let us down, and you can't have that in a game like this. And the final point I want to make before we close the book on this one and on 2023 derbies is about Krunic. We kind of hypothesized over the last few weeks that Krunic is going to be absolutely okay, as in 6 out of 10, performing that role at the base of the midfield against the majority of opponents that we face, because he's tidy, he's no thrills, he ain't going to dribble past 5 players, he's not going to knock a 70-yard ball out to the wing, but he can just do everything to a basic level. This, I think, was one of those games where it proved we need something more from midfield. And he is not, he's a chocolate fire guard when those midfielders are coming forward and like, yeah, I don't know. Throw it out there.
I mean, that's really it. Go ahead, because I've said it.
No, I was going to say he's just very fireworks, no disasters. You know, a player that is, I don't think I've ever seen him really be phenomenal, but he's just very much a facilitator. I remember in the 4-0 against Napoli where he kept sort of just popping up in the back line, lets the fullbacks push on. He's almost a necessary, evil's the wrong word. He's not necessary, but he's almost a necessary passenger at times to let your other players get further forward. So yeah, he was fine. But they're players you need in big games like this. I always feel like Barella has a phenomenal game in a derby. Seems to really be up for that. And as you say, with Çalhanoğlu and Mkhitaryan as well. When you get yourself on the score sheet and you're making goals and assists, then that is the difference, isn't it? That is, you couldn't lead in a more perfect way in a derby than making sort of decisive contributions like that.
Well, Barella didn't even show up, so I just want to throw that one out there because I can't stand that guy. He was the first sub off because he was trash. But going back to our players, also trash, by the way. Of all of Kier's shortcomings as a player, at least he fights. You know, he gives 100% in every tackle. He might get it completely wrong and concede a goal, and he does that. Like we all agree he shouldn't be out there. He's close to 40, I believe. He's also 36 or 37, but at least he gives you the right mentality where, like you said, Teo gave up. He gave away a penalty. He gets pushed off the ball for the first goal. He doesn't care. He's like, whatever, I lose these games. Now, he really hasn't had a good derby since the one he got sent off in against Dumfries, where I believe that was a 2-1 victory, right?
Yeah, that was the Giroud game.
Yeah, he hasn't had a good derby since then. Maignan is a leader on the field. It's hard to look for a leader who just let in 5 goals. I know most of them aren't really his fault. He's not doing a whole lot to those, but it's, you know, like, how do you be like, okay, this guy's got our back when you literally just let in 5? And yes, you could blame other people, but that's looking at
third
it like
goal.
That.
All I'm going to say is the third goal, he didn't even move. He went in at his near post and he did not even put out an arm to save it. Isaac was saying in the chat, like, oh, well, it deflected. That's going to impact a goalkeeper. You at least put an arm out and try save it. If anything, it made it a more savable height. But yeah, you're right. Yeah. The other four.
It was bad. I don't even remember. I know Frateza got the 5th one. I genuinely don't remember how it went. Mentally, I was out at that point. I was whatever, you know. But yeah, and again, Leao throwing his temper tantrum after the third goal, and justified, by the way. I'm not attacking him for that, justified. But again, that's another guy who's been there, who's a leader. And as you're saying, Pioli said, I didn't watch the press conference, but if he's saying it looked like it affected the old players who had been there more, it's because they got their ass beat 4 times last season. And once it went south, they're like, here we go again. The new players didn't have that experience. And to them, it was just like, well, a goal behind. You know, we could come back. And unfortunately, they also weren't very good. You know, every time Loftus-Cheek and Christian Pulisic tried to link up, one of them didn't understand what the other one's idea was. And it kept going back to Calabria or back to Chow and then back to Maignan. Like, we did a lot of back passes every time we moved forward. And, you know, sometimes that's what you got to do to break down a defense, but we weren't breaking down a defense. We were just trying to keep possession. And those are those precious 4 minutes Pioli's talking about at the start of the game. But what happened after that, you know? So it's a collective defeat. I don't think anyone should be singled out, but they all looked really bad.
It is literally a waste of time trying to pick out one player and say they were the problem for that. Yeah. And that is both worrying, and also it stops there being an unnecessary pile on a player like Chiao, for example, who has been more good than bad for us. But yeah, it was essentially a team collective failure. Like, even Reinders, the game was bypassing him. You've got to realize he hasn't played in a game of this level, of this intensity, quality before. And there are players that are going to need time to adapt. And Pulisic, it wasn't his best game. He didn't have the most joy. He got doubled up on mostly in the first half. And then it became clear that he was struggling from the effects of flying 12 hours back, 48 hours before the game, because he'd been on international duty. And this is what happens. The comments after the game seem to generate a fair bit of reaction as well. Pioli refused to apologise to the fans for the performance, saying, you know, we didn't lose the game deliberately, were basically his words, and that the players tried, but they were just beaten. And then Kier came out. Although, looking at the performance, I'm not so sure that that's the case. I think it was fucking sabotage at times from the from Pioli. And then Kier did come out and apologise straight after that. Said, I am sorry to the fans.
Yeah.
And
there's
it just
that lack
makes
of communication.
You,
you know, if the head guy, the manager, is saying, we're not apologizing for this, and then immediately a player says, hey, I'm sorry. Like, at least tell the team, we're not apologizing for our performance. We gave it our all. And then they stick with that story, you know, like, get your story straight. But it's a pathetic stance to take. Like, no one assumes that they threw the game. No one thinks that they didn't give it their all. They got their asses beat, and that comes down to tactics and game management and a lot of other things. But you do apologize for that because you are responsible for it, whether you intended to or not. You know, if I'm driving and hit another car, it wasn't intentional, but I got to apologize if it's my fault, right? Like, you know, it's, I don't know. That's silly.
We weren't. Nobody was asking him to apologize for the effort levels.
No, but it's, you know, when that's, you say, never, I'm not going to apologize. It's like, that's, we didn't never, ask you, yeah. Now you're a piece of shit for not, you know, like.
Going out of his way to say it. I just remembered it was Kier who came out first and apologized. So it was almost like Pioli was saying, after his own player had said it, we're not apologizing for that. Well, first of all, one of your leaders just did.
That's probably what prompted the question then.
Yeah, and secondly, it just makes you look a bit spiky and a bit defensive. He does have this knack now, Pioli, for when we've had a bad result, and this happened particularly in the sort of January crisis earlier in the year. Instead of sort of owning up to it and saying, okay, this happened again that we got wrong and I know what I need to do to fix it, he just kind of becomes a bit flippant and a bit like, well, you know, it, I'm not apologising for it. We'll get back on the training ground and we have to recover in the next game. And I think people are getting a bit bored of the rhetoric now. You know, like, it's empty words. We need to see improvements in performances against a guy that, you won a Scudetto and he hasn't got one, you know? Like, you managed to outlast this guy and win the league title in 2021-22. And you're getting your ass handed to you five times in a row now. So here we are. Right, we'll do man of the match and flop of the match then for this one. The man of the match just has to be Leao for the goal. And I know that's very simplistic, but you're not picking from many for this game.
Yeah, I wasn't going to pick one at all.
Yeah,
I abstain.
Fair. Liam, did you see a man of the match? Are you abstaining as well?
Yeah, I think I'd refuse to give one out on that result. Yeah, there's no, even Leao, I think, didn't have enough of an impactful game. He did score, but there's, you know, not solely on him to carry an attack. But both he and Pulisic weren't given enough service and it didn't seem to suit them. But yeah, you needed more from everyone individually. And also in the sense that I think it's equally hard to pick an individual flop of the match, which is also a really weird situation to be in after that big a defeat, which says a lot about the system and all the tactical stuff we've just broken down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would agree with that. If you single anyone out, you know, someone's going to be mad. So it's like they all had a big flop. I'm not picking anyone.
Yeah, we've all had a cathartic rant about all the players who underperformed. I'm giving the flop to Pioli. It's obviously coach, not player, but you set your team up to fail and then you can't act surprised when they fail, you know? Let's move on then. Champions League action. So we got drawn in the what people are calling the group of death, with PSG being the pot one team, Borussia Dortmund being pot two, us in pot three, and Newcastle United making their first appearance in the Champions League in 20 years, coming out as the pot four team. Before we go into this game in particular, Liam, what were your reactions when you saw this draw? And who would you pick sort of on paper before a ball's being kicked in the group as the two teams you would fancy to go through?
Yeah, it's a hefty group. I think there's a very real situation where any of all of them could progress in any of the four positions. You know, you could put the group any which way and I could see that happening. People will probably write off Dortmund as one of the weaker teams, I think, given the fact they, you know, really bottled it on the final day last season. But they got through the groups fairly well last time. They got into the knockouts and stuff. So this is a team with enough experience that have done it in sort of recent seasons. And I think they always have a decent-ish record in getting out of the groups, not necessarily going particularly deep, but they're definitely not a team to write off, particularly at home. I think you said that for all of the teams. PSG are always seen as one of the strongest ones on paper, but I've watched a few of their games at the start of the season now under Luis Enrique. They've had a good couple of wins. They beat Lens quite well, but then Lens have started badly, beat Lyon well, but Lyon have started badly. And besides that, were very bad at home to Nice recently. Had sort of similar issues to Milan, really, about just getting pulled apart in transition and having a lot of the ball without being particularly incisive. And his electric of Newcastle have been under Eddie Howe. They had three losses in a row prior to this weekend, and then beat Bournemouth unconvincingly with a penalty and maybe could have drawn or not won the game. So yeah, I wouldn't know where to start to predict this. And I think it's going to be really probably quite dependent on how the first three, I know this sounds silly, but how the first sort of three games go. I think I can't see anyone recovering if they start badly in this group. I think there's too much quality to be able to win sort of your final three games when it comes to deep in sort of the winter, and there's injuries and there's a fixture sort of build up. I think you're going to need to start well with, you know, a win out of your first two games, definitely, maybe sort of two wins. I think whoever sets the pace will, yeah, will probably go through. No collapses.
Big one for us this as well, because we have Newcastle at home, which some might say that or Dortmund are the more affordable fixtures. Those two games at home are where we need to look at racking up 6 points, really. And then after this, we've got Dortmund away, PSG away. So two tough away trips to come after this. And as you mentioned, falling behind could be absolutely fatal in this group. And also, as you mentioned, Newcastle have had a bit of a stuttering start to the season. They found themselves in mid-table, having lost to they lost to City, Liverpool, and who was the other one?
And to
Can't
Brighton.
remember. It was. That's why I couldn't remember. The shirt in the background not being a big
Yeah.
clue. Yeah, Brighton, tell us what you did to pull them apart.
I think Brighton were helped by the it's injury, I think, to Sven Botman. So one of Newcastle's big strengths really is they've had one of the most settled and say back fives in the league when you include Nick Pope, their goalkeeper. Almost always playing a 4-3-3. That's with Dan Burn off the left, who is sort of a centre back converted into a full back, more defensive than Kieran Trippier on the right, who pushes forward really well and really is one of their key attackers. And then Fabian Schär at right centre back and Sven Botman at left centre back are two really good balanced defenders, both good ball progressors, but also both really good at, you know, clearances, defending the box. And Newcastle, I think, had I think it's second best defence in the league last season, in the Premier League, or they were definitely up there. And they were without Botman against Brighton. Burn came into left centre back and he just had issues tracking Evan Ferguson, the number nine, sort of when he stepped in. And their defence, just I guess, having been so organised and balanced that when you suddenly then have to go away from that, it takes time to adjust. And Premier League in the Champions League as well, you don't get that time or opportunity to adjust. You know, players are quick, they're good, they're incisive, the attacks are better than any other standard of football. So I think that is an area where Milan could cause them serious problems. I think, particularly looking at that Giroud Leao link up, could possibly be really devastating.
The need for an immediate response is there, and we're at that stage of the season, I suppose, where having a congested fixture list can actually be a beneficiary, because if you have a bad result, you don't have much time to dwell on it. You're just straight back out there, and for us, there's no travelling involved. We're back in 4 days after the scene of the crime at the same place to try and put things right. AJ, are you making any lineup changes for this one based on what we saw and who might be tired and who might be shit?
Well, I mean, it sounds like Pioli is. The obvious one is Tomori back in the lineup, right? He's not suspended for the Champions League, so no reason to not play him. It sounds like Pioli's going to play Paul Bago over Reinders, giving Reinders a rest, even though he played 57 games last season, has no injury record, and has no history of needing a rest, especially at his young age. And then Loftus-Cheek, who does have an injury record, is being forced to play again. So, you know, go Stefano there, but. Yeah, I personally wouldn't make that change. If I'm going to put Pobega in there, it's for Loftus-Cheek. They're more like for like. It doesn't make sense to me to take out our most creative midfielder for another just physical guy who, and he's like, let's be real, Pobega is a bit more of an oaf, just kind of running around with cinder block shoes and, you know, hitting the ball, hitting people and hoping for the best. And whenever I make a point to attack him for that, he tends to score. So, you know, hopefully that continues. But me personally, I don't play him. And it sounds like Chukwueze is going to start as well over Pulisic. I get it. He needs a rest. He started every game. Chukwueze's got to start eventually. What better game to do it than in the Champions League as opposed to, you know, in the league where you've already kind of decided on Christian? But Christian has played Newcastle quite a few times, you know, and Chukwueze is new to this. So I don't. Well, I haven't fact checked that, as the comments will tell you. I don't know if he's played Newcastle before, but I know Christian obviously has. That's a weird one to me as well, but I don't absolutely hate it. Then, yeah, I think the rest just sets itself. I think with it being at home, with it being Newcastle's first time in the Champions League in over 20 years, And with them playing in the Premier League, a league notorious for weak atmospheres, you know, they get excited when there's a goal, and that's really about it.
As you should.
I mean, yeah, but they're not, you know, singing and chanting the whole time.
Celebration.
No. Yeah.
I think they might come into San Siro and be like, oh, you know, this is loud or something. And that might startle everyone, obviously, bar Tonali. Yeah, so I don't know. I think this one actually plays into our favor, especially with this being their first game in it in the 20 years. I think we have a good opportunity here, but I'm not set on Newcastle exiting this group. You know, I think they might be able to just barely scratch by and get through if things go badly for us. But I'm still leaning towards PSG topping the group, and then we'll see. It's a toss-up between us and Newcastle for second.
Yeah, I'm a bit worried about this one because I think Inter have shown the way to beat us for a start. I'm not saying that Newcastle could exactly replicate what Inter did, both systematically and because of the players that they have, but they can at least take bits from it and say that if you let Milan have the ball when they give it away, their defenders aren't that great if they're put in two-on-two, one-on-one situations. So also the pressure isn't really on Newcastle to come to San Siro and win that first game. They'll probably back themselves more in their home form and perhaps even being able to go to, say, Dortmund and win over going to us and winning. Then you've got the fact that actually Newcastle's 11 is pretty good when they do have that set centre-back pairing, as Liam mentioned. Trippier will cause problems because him v Teo down our left side, it's going to be cat and mouse all game. I rate Gordon, he's the king of take-ons, and he's going to give Calabria a real examination depending on which flank that he plays on. Alexander Isaac, who Sky is saying is most likely to start up front, he's amazing. You know, we were linked with him before he ended up going to Newcastle, and I think if we had him at the heart of our attack now, we'd probably look in a better shape. And then you've got the midfield. Joelinton is injured, so he's not going to play, and that means that they're likely to play Elliot Anderson. Sort of on the left side, I think, of the three. And then Tonali on the right side, he shrugged off a muscle problem. But you never know, he could re-aggravate it, whatever. And then Bruno at the base, Bruno Guimaraes, who's still, for me, their best player probably and their metronome in terms of how they play. So 4-3-3 is going to match up a 4-3-3 system-wise. And it is, I think it's going to be maybe won and lost in the midfield again. Yeah, I don't know. Predictions?
Liam, you go first.
I'm horrible with predictions.
don't have to be a score. How do you see the game going? Can you see us getting sucker punched again?
I think the start is even more important than the Inter one based off the back of the result there. That, as you say, having been to a Champions League game at the San Siro, the atmosphere sort of pinned me back in my seat a bit. That's something they need to play off. If you know, can see the goal on the counter-attack early. I think Eddie Howe's remit for Newcastle will be a case of go there and, you know, it's their first game. It's probably try a few things out as well. It's probably a case of, look, anything is a bonus as a result. Milan just need to start well. And that doesn't mean be ahead early on, but I think it means keep control, have control, don't be vulnerable in transition, and things need to click from the off. So I think there's less of a desperation to win and bounce back straight away, as you mentioned, just because of how quickly the games are coming. And let's also be fair that you've started quite well in the league. It's not like a case you're already playing catch up. But just don't implode like against Inter, which is easier said than done. But this is a Newcastle team who, at their best, are a quick, incisive attacking team. We actually saw, if people want to watch a good example, when they lost 2-1 at home to Liverpool, they were playing 11v10 for most of the game, and Virgil van Dijk was centre for Liverpool. And when Newcastle play against a deep line defence, they haven't really got the answers. They're not a great team actually controlling the ball to create more chances. They can look vulnerable when they do have turnovers themselves. They've got good inverted wingers that like to cut inside. They've got Trippier to overlap on the right. But they're kind of seen as, I think, similar to sort of early Liverpool under Jurgen Klopp, where they're about intensity, about directness, about a bit of chaos as well. So if you can control the game better and minimise that, then that should see you on the right end of the result.
Yeah, I'm just looking at their previous games this season. The only one they failed to score in was against Man City. You know, you can't really hold them at quite well for that, you know. And they only lost 1-0, so that's
honestly deserved something from that game, from what I remember. They were pretty good.
But looking at the other ones, you know, Liverpool, they went ahead early and then lost. Obviously, Brighton smoked them, and then they just got a late consolation goal. And they needed the penalty to get past Brentford. So the only game that's really sticking out is that opener against Aston Villa, the 5-1 victory. Tonali scored the first goal in that one. Hopefully he doesn't feel like doing the same thing on his return here. But yeah, I think Liam makes a really good point. They might be trying some new things. Something dangerous to think about is, because this is their first game back in 20 years, the expectation isn't, you know, making it to the final. It might not even be making it out of the groups. So who knows? They might have nothing to lose. They might just balls to the wall and try to emulate Inter. And if they do that, then it's going to be a long day for us. But I think we're going to start strong, and hopefully that's enough. I don't see them coming back from behind to win any games. At least they haven't yet this season. So neither are we. But I think if we score first, it doesn't have to be very early, but score first in the first half, go to halftime 1-0 up or whatever it may be, I think we could ride it out. And I'm going to predict a win here, but it's going to be a close one. Like a 2-1.
I'm sticking with what I've put in the preview, which I've already written part of, and I'm going to go with 1-1. I would love to see us take this game and play it with composure and control, as if to be like, we're the ones with the experience in this competition, you know, realize the level that you're at and let the atmosphere do the rest, and hope that we force them into mistakes by just playing tidy football rather than being all over the place on both ends. But I think that we're just going to have to stabilize after that result on Saturday. And I think a draw, while it wouldn't massively boost our chances of getting through the groups, I can see them potentially hitting us on a break, and either we battle back for a point or alternatively we get the lead and we fail to hold it. I don't know. I'm not massively confident for this one, but I think it'll be a good test of both teams' mettle and where they're at, because, you know, how Pioli is not something that I thought I'd see 3 years ago. And yet here we are, and it'll be a good test for him as a young coach, and it'll be a good test for some of their younger players. How will Tonali get on? What reception will he get? And I'm actually looking forward to it. I think it'll be a good spectacle. Fingers crossed that we can shut the Geordies up. We'll do the Verona one now as well. We don't have much insight for this one, obviously, because of the fact that we play Newcastle first, in terms of what team selection might be, if he would rotate again. We then have Cagliari away the following midweek, so the congested schedule continues. Liam, have you seen any of Hellas Verona?
No, didn't Inter smash them at the tail end of last season? They're not one of the teams they put like six past. Just for maybe just an empty final. Yeah. So
they were rubbish last season.
Yeah, that hopefully bodes well. I'm not sure what they played system wise, but I thought it was interesting that Milan had a couple of sort of practices, if you like, before they played into it, playing against a back three / back five defense. So these are still important tests. Speaking more broadly here on the mid to lower end of some of the Serie A teams, you get it a lot. It's the same in the Premier League, where some of the top possession sides will go to bottom half teams and struggle either with the occasion, where the atmosphere is just better because they want to beat a bigger team, or they're playing into the mid sort of low block. So that, you know, whereas it's a game you expect to win more and to dominate, I think it's a case of like how you play the game and how you manage it is definitely, from a broader tactical system perspective for Pioli, really important.
Yeah, Verona last season, they managed to stay up in the relegation playoff. They were lucky to do so, because if it had been normal, as in the season before and prior to that, they would have gone down on goal difference. But because a ruling had just come in, which meant that if two teams were tied on points, there'd be a relegation playoff. They played Spezia in that and ended up beating them to secure their survival. And they didn't mess about, really, to be fair to them. They actually managed to, I'd say, poach Marco Baroni as head coach, who was at Lecce before, and he managed to, I won't say miraculously, because they didn't have a bad team, but he managed to keep Lecce up last season and they returned to the top flight, and Verona managed to get him to be their new head coach. And they started the season pretty well as well. They won their first two matches of the season against Empoli and Roma, but then they lost last time out against Sassuolo, and what did they do in the last game? I've forgotten. Oh no, that was it. They haven't played. Yeah. They haven't played yet this round. So yeah, there we go. They're still probably aiming to be like lower mid table. They can have another relegation battle. Not a club of that size, no matter how badly they've been run. So it's got to be a win for us ultimately, without being too arrogant about it. If we are serious about putting up a battle for the title,
and it has been a win. The last five games we've won against them, three of those by three goals scored, and the other two with two goals scored. I mean, this isn't a team that troubles us. In fact, they haven't beat us since like 2017, something like that. This should be routine. You know, Liao had a brace in the last game against them. I think Giroud had a penalty as well. Obviously, one of those games, and I'm including in that, was the crazy comeback, the 3-2 comeback in the Scudetto season. We were down 2-0 at half, and then came out on top with the Castillejo masterclass at the end there. But other than that, we haven't had many struggles against Hellas Verona. This is a team that historically, at least the last couple seasons, has been an easy 6 points for us. I would hope that continues, but you never know, fatigue from the Champions League, depending on what the rotation was looking like, if there's a rotation. We know Pioli really rotated a lot last season with the Champions League. Maybe he doesn't do it as much this year, especially early on, but I would imagine this is, you know, our normal lineup, and we get a couple goals out of this one as well. I would imagine this is another three goals scored at least.
There's something you're not factoring into the equation. Early kickoff.
That sucks.
Yeah, basically we have a bad record when it comes to being the early kickoff. I'd say like last season we must have played a handful of games as the early kickoff, and it never seemed to go well. We do better under the lights generally, but yeah, we'll see. I'm actually going to miss this one because I'm going to be watching Union Berlin at the same time against Hoffenheim, going to Germany for the weekend, and unfortunately those games have clashed. But I hope to be checking the scores and seeing that we've won. Let's move on then and do a couple of questions, and then we shall round it off. That's if people have sent in questions that are suitable for reading out. Wouldn't blame them if they've gone full meltdown at this point. People asking for the name of Pioli's agent. Okay, Michael Gambino. Oh, we get worse than that. Michael Gambino asks, is it time to try Okafor up front for a game, given the minutes Giroud has already had this year? I think if there's a game to try that in, it might well be the Verona game. Yeah, I think that might be the one where we see like Musa get his first start, and maybe if Kalulu's, I don't know how he's looking injury wise. I don't think he's going to be back, but let's say he is, then you give him a start in that game, and maybe Adley or something like that. That might be the game where you rotate, but obviously you've got to secure the result first and foremost. But yeah, more mobile nine would be nice.
Yeah, I would like that. Try it out. You know, it's like I said, it's an easier game this season compared to what we have later. In the rest of this 10-game stretch here. So now or never.
You also can't rule out the notion of Okafor starting as a left winger and Jovic starting up front. Mm-hmm. Liam, what do you think of the signing of Luka Jovic out of interest? We signed him on a free transfer in the end from Fiorentina, and it's getting towards, now he's 25 now, we're getting towards like, not quite last chance saloon, but, you know, how many more chances is he going to get at a big club?
I'd forgotten he existed, to be honest. He was really good a few years back, I think, which I don't mean insultingly. But I remember him being a real... I mean, maybe... Where was he before Fiorentina? Was it Fiorentina where he had a breakout, or was it somewhere else?
He was at Eintracht Frankfurt, and then he got the big money move to Real Madrid, and then he got loaned back to Frankfurt, and then he joined Fiorentina on a free, I think.
So was he part of Frankfurt's team when they got deep in the Europa League?
Yes.
So they end up winning it. That shouldn't be said. So they beat Rangers, didn't they, in the final, of course. So yeah, part of a really good counter-attacking team there. So look, there's for a player to get through and at that young age, be part of a tournament-winning team and be in the top five European leagues. Evidently, there's talent. There's a profile there. I think from what I've seen of him as well, he's a bit different to Giroud. Was a nine, a bit quicker, a bit more of a a player off the shoulder rather than sort of a hold up forward. So yeah, definitely, it's good to have, even if you need to maybe coach a bit more into the player now, or there's a bit more work to be done to get him to a level. It's a necessary thing from Lantam, I think, to have that variety, even just to try and play in a different way.
I think you can make a case for Jovic being a big part of whether we sink or swim this season, to be honest, because we made the decision in the summer transfer window to try and sign another striker. It was going to be Mehdi Taremi from Porto for about 18 million euros. So the money was there to be invested in a striker who would at least get us through a season or two. You know, he's not too dissimilar to Giroud and arguably offers quite a bit more in open play. But we weren't able to agree personal terms with him. So then we switched to Patson Daka from Leicester, who I think was going to join Bournemouth, and then that collapsed as well. People were sort of excited about that. He'd done well at Salzburg and joined a Leicester team that were at that point on the decline. But that didn't get done either. There wasn't enough time to get him a work permit. So then we switched to Rafa Mir of Sevilla, and you know, he's no bueno from what I've seen of him, just a big clogger basically. And then it was like, okay, well, we don't have any options left now. We're going to have to sign Jovic on a free. So it kind of went down this slippery slope towards the end of the winter. We knew we needed another centre forward. And I think that the name we ended up with was unfortunately a name that's down the list. That doesn't mean that Jovic will do badly. Above all, he needs to stay fit. He played 50 games for Fiorentina last season. And, you know, if he can just stay reliably healthy for whenever we need him, and he can chip in with a similar goal contribution to last season in terms of the minutes that he played, then we'll be absolutely fine and he'll probably earn himself another contract. But if he just doesn't hit the ground running, the big games are not for him anymore, or he gets injured, then we're going to have to give Giroud too many minutes again. And I think that's going to impact the way that we play. And it will also impact what happens with Okafor. And then if we have any depth at left wing, do we have to move Pulisic over? Then Chukwueze starts more games. It can just become a real mess if we don't get a contribution from someone that ultimately we brought in on deadline day. Okay, final one comes from Christian Espinoza. If Pioli goes back to a 4-2-3-1, which two players out of Loftus-Cheek, Reinders and Krunic would you start? And what about Bennacer when he's healthy? Formation change stuff already? We've only had four games. That feels like a bit of a stretch, maybe. I like what I've seen from the 4-3-3 in three out of the four games so far this season. Yeah. I hated what I saw in the last game. And I think that a lot of people are on that same train of thought, and we just need a little bit of...
Where do we think Bennacer slots in come February when he inevitably returns? Does he just take Krunic's spot? Does he, you know, replace Reinders? I hope not. I like to see him take the Krunic spot, and yeah, he could probably flourish there. So I don't think a 4-2-3-1 is in our future. We didn't sign a single attacking midfielder. We don't have one. So, I mean, unless you want to try Okafor there, but that's weird.
Adley. God bless him.
Oh my God, I forgot he's on the team.
God bless him. No, he'd play Pobega as a 10 instead. Yeah. Liam, we've got to stick with the 4-3-3, right? You spend an entire summer preparing that particular system, yeah, and it's meant to address some of the balance issues that we had. And yeah, a really bad game against Inter, but I don't think that was necessarily formation based.
No, you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater, I don't think. You've had three really good games before, and I think the most of your league games and also some of the Champions League games are going to be more like what the first few games of the season were than being into specifics. So it's a case of, look, plan A is really good. You just might need a big plan B for when you face Inter going forward. And I realize could have said that in numerous points already this calendar year. But yeah, that's where you've got to, I think, work hard to be more rational, not too emotional when you do make changes in the following game. So I feel like this could be a situation where, you know, if you beat Newcastle, you beat Hellasverona, and then you go and win your first away Champions League game of the season, then the mood suddenly can change very quickly, which is just the nature of the beast when you do play sort of, you know, twice a week. It can very, very quickly sort of flip around.
Yeah, totally agree. We'll call it there. Thank you to everybody who has made it so far in what has essentially become a counselling session. We had a few of these last season as well, but it's good to get everything off our chests. If you want more I guess, emotional, perhaps more expletive. Oh, no, they're not expletive, actually. They're not too bad on that front. Then check out Stefano and Ahmed's recaps of the Inter games, and let us know what you thought of the game as well. And if you have an idea for how to line up against Inter, because Pioli doesn't, so any advice that we can give him would probably be beneficial at this point. Thank you again to everybody who supports what we do on Substack. Really appreciate you guys getting involved. I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. Find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. AJ, cheers for joining.
See you guys.
Liam, thank you very much for coming on again and having to recap another derby defeat. It would only be right that if we win the rematch later in the season, we get you on, because that'll be your redemption arc.
Love to. Yeah, need to be back on in some happier times at some point. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Goal! Ancora Teo! È una meraviglia! Il gol di Teo Hernandez! Da un'ora all'altra! È una meraviglia! Senti il mio...